Welcome to The Associate, a podcast dedicated to democratizing venture capital and increasing access to capital. Our mission is to educate the community, support founders, give a voice to investors, and anyone else involved in the fields of startups, technology, and venture capital. I'm your host, Imari Watson, a current HBCU VC fellow. For the inaugural episode of The Associate, I'm extremely excited to introduce our first guest, CEO and founder of HBCU VC, Hadia Majid. She stands out at the forefront of equitable investments and entrepreneurship, serving as a visionary leader and acclaimed author. As CEO and founder of HBCU VC, Hadia leads a movement that reshapes venture capital to be inclusive and equitable. Her steadfast dedication has played a pivotal role in shaping the career paths and professional growth of the next generation of social impact investors. Co-author of the book, Black Founders at Work, Journeys to Innovation, Hadia brings underrepresented voices to the forefront and offers a fresh blueprint from inclusive entrepreneurship. She leverages her experience spanning over two decades as an investor, entrepreneur, educator, and software engineer to advocate for the use of technology, entrepreneurship, and equitable investments to combat economic inequality. She earned her MBA from Drexel University and a BS in Computer Science from the University of Maryland Eastern Shore. Hadia remains unwavering in her mission to drive equitable innovation, transform venture capital, and shape the future of impact investing for generations to come. Thank you so much, Hadia, for joining us today. We are so excited to have you on The Associate.
I'm honored to be the first guest.
So for the listeners, I really just want to start off by drawing a really quick picture about how genuine of a person you are and how I met you, because I really feel like that will translate into the HBCU VC as an organization and as a whole, and just how you all care for the fellows in the space that we're in. And feel free to jump in at any time. But I met Hadia via LinkedIn, and she had made a post about coming to different HBCUs to kind of expand everyone's knowledge about HBCU VC. And I guess to backtrack on that a little bit, I have been following her on LinkedIn, and I have been following HBCU VC for about 3 or 4 years, about around the time I first found out about venture capital. And so when she made this post, I'm a student at Clark Atlanta University, quick commenting like, oh, come to Clark Atlanta, you should come to Clark Atlanta. So she was able to, I guess, get connected with someone at the school, and her and Kylie ended up coming to the school to talk about HBCU VC. And I remember one of the first questions that she asked, that you guys asked, was, does anybody know what venture capital is? And I don't think anybody raised, and even at the time, I mean, I knew what it was, but being new into the space, I didn't raise my hand and, say, how you don't want to sound, be wrong or anything like that. But the way she explained it and the way she broke it down, I could tell that the audience quickly became more intrigued about what she was about to present to us. And she gave us an activity, and it was interactive. I already knew I was going to talk to you after the presentation, but I had made up in my mind. I was like, I have to be a fellow with them. I have to work with them. So thank you for coming to Clark Atlanta University. I think that was in September. And ever since then, any event that they had online, any workshop, I made sure that I attended, because, we could talk about this later. Like, you all are really invested in your mission and setting up the next generation of venture capitalists, investors, to be great leaders. And I'm just going to give you your flowers and say thank you at the beginning.
So, I definitely appreciate that. I totally forgot that we had connected on LinkedIn first. Mm-hmm. And I remember you, because at that time we wanted to make sure that before we went to the universities, there were people who could serve as like student ambassadors, if you will, to invite people. And so I am really grateful that you responded to that call for support. And, I do remember meeting you for the first time, and I was, mm-hmm. I get super excited, and I wish that I can have sort of like every relationship with every fellow where I get a chance to meet them at their school, and then they apply, and then we get to build a relationship together. But for me, once I met you and we were at Clark, I was like, I knew she was going to be like, she's going to be a fellow. So I'm excited to have you in the community.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to be here. So just even piggybacking off of that, as someone who has years of experience in this field, for our listeners who have never heard of VC before, and let me backtrack. The textbook definition, if you would say the dictionary definition of venture capital, what we're here to talk about today is capital invested in a project in which there is a substantial element of risk, typically a new or expanding business. For someone that doesn't have experience in the space and doesn't know anything about this, can you break down and expand on exactly what that means in layman's terms?
Yeah, absolutely. That's such a very boring explanation of venture capital. And there's so many ways to explain it, but I think the easiest and most direct way to explain venture capital is, and I'll do this from the investor perspective, right? From the investor perspective, you are giving someone money, so someone who has a company, and then in exchange, they are giving you ownership in that company. Then from the entrepreneurial perspective, you know, if I don't have any investors, if I have a for-profit organization, I am technically 100% owner. And what I can do is I can take investment. When I take investment, I'm selling a percentage of my company to an investor. And that money I can use to grow my business, do other things with it. So it really is the definition of taking money in exchange for equity. And equity is another word for ownership. Now, when you sell your company, you're taking money and you are selling 100% of your company.
Right. So for someone that doesn't know what venture capital is, maybe for an aspiring founder, entrepreneur, is venture capital the best way to get capital for your business for every?
Quick answer is no. Venture capital is a very niche type of financing. And I think for most businesses, I would say probably close to 99% of businesses, it is not the right fit for businesses. And I think it's important for us to know, because there's two things that when you hear the narrative of access to capital, I think a lot of things are layered on top of each other. And I don't think it's a fair conversation sometimes. One, we know historically for many reasons, there are disparities in access to capital for Black and Brown communities, right? And that lays on so many factors. One is that often when you are starting, I would say, a technology business or a high growth business, these are companies that I would say have an unproven business model, right? If I start a restaurant, my business model is basically known. I'm going to sell food and I'm going to make money. Technology companies are a little bit different. And so usually I would try to get, depending on what my background or my socioeconomic background is, I could start this company, work on it full time, and depending on my socioeconomic background, I can maybe live with my parents or my spouse will take care of me, or I can ask friends and family to hold me down or invest in my money for that. For many Black and Brown communities, sometimes this is not an option. And so we are eagerly, we also want to start business and right. We should have a right to start businesses, but a lot of our, some of our socioeconomic conditions are not the same to allow that privilege of starting a business. Now, I say that because that type of financing is very specific for what I consider to be a high growth businesses. What I see a lot of times is companies who don't fit into that high growth business model, or like they're starting a business, but that business may be a catering business or a hair shop. And these are businesses that definitely need startup financing right. In their earlier stages, they might go to VCs and try to get VC funding. And that hands down is not the right type of funding right. for these businesses. And so what I see is probably not a right alignment of people finding the right type of business funding for the businesses, and then layer onto that narrative of this is what they're, you know, they're not funding us, or, you know,
right.
Which is true in itself. But at the same time, We have to, it's important for us to understand what is the right funding for the type of businesses that we are for, that we're going to create.
Yes. And I really appreciate you saying that last part, because I found even in the space that I'm in now, telling people about the type of internship I have and what I'll be doing, the first thing I say was like, oh, I have a business, or I do this and I do this. And then I find myself taking that next step. Well, okay, let me break this down more. Your makeup business might not be the best option for this, or and this is why. Not that you don't deserve this funding, you know, as far as ownership and the way you're going to grow and the things that you want to do. There might be other options like grants and different types of programs that might suit you better. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for explaining that. So we mentioned earlier that you are the CEO and founder of HBCUVC. Could you tell us a little bit about what HBCUVC is, and how does the organization itself play an important role in the venture capital system that we talked about earlier?
Yeah, absolutely. HBCUVC, I started the organization in 2017, so that's 7 years for us. Mm-hmm. And I would say today there is more awareness around, even if you don't know exactly what VC is, you sort of heard about it. You maybe have watched Shark Tank. Shark Tank, right?
Yeah. The first time I told my grandparents what I was doing, I was like, think Shark Tank, and I'm Mark Cuban. And my grandfather was like, yeah.
Oh. And I feel like that's the easier, you know, and thankful to like media for making that easier for us to explain. And so in this industry of like Shark Tank investors, I'm getting to the point of like, why we're doing it. Generally, you know, Shark Tank is very different from like than how venture capital works, right? That's very much entertainment. But generally, the current way of most entrepreneurs who are raising venture capital, they're in the early stages of their company. They don't necessarily have a proven model, or they don't necessarily have customers yet. And so they have to go to these investors and prove to them, to give them, in this case, a lot of times, you know, you're asking for millions of dollars, right? So like if you're doing a seed raise, you might be trying to raise a round of $4 million, right? It's just a lot of money, right? It's a lot of money for me. I think it's a lot of money. And so if you come to me and you say, you know, when we talk, usually you don't ask one person for $4 million. It's usually like many investors. So you might go to one investor and say, hey, I'm raising a round of $4 million, you know, for this evaluation of my company. And investor individually might write a check of like $250,000 to $500,000. Again, that's still a lot of money. That investor at that time, a lot of people think that they're looking at this idea of a business and say, wow, that's a great idea. I want to invest in that. But the reality is that ideas are worthless, right? If ideas were worthless, you know how much money I would have for the amount of ideas that I come up with. Instead, what the investor is looking at is they are looking at, and we can talk about the financial outcomes that investors are professional finance. So they have to make money for people who give them money. They're looking at, is this business truly capable of reaching a certain market size to become a $1 billion business, if you will, right?
And we call those unicorns, correct?
Yeah. If you receive $1 billion valuation, it's considered a unicorn. But really, you're trying to look at a market, right? You know, we talk about, you know, Black woman hair care is a $1 billion industry, right?
It is.
Dollars being spent in that. That is a $1 billion market. So they're looking at, but what may not be a $1 billion market is, hey, I'm starting a company that is only going to look at dog owners in the Houston area, right? That's just not, and then just say, hey, that market size is too small, right? I need to make sure that you're able to reach it $1 billion. So they're looking at market size. That's one thing that they're looking at. The other thing that they are going to look at, which becomes extremely important. And I am going to get to the point of why HBCUBC.
No, no, you know, you're bringing it to the masses. You're explaining what this concept is and what we need to know. You're educating us.
Right. The other thing that they're going to look at is, are you and your co-founder, your team, are you truly the right people to raise, to not raise, but to run a $1 billion company, right? And that's a subjective company, a subjective question. I mean, running a $1 billion company is hard work. It doesn't happen overnight.
Right.
And so they have to look at you, try to find some type of indication that I believe that you are the right person. And when people do that, they rely on patterns. They rely on their own personal beliefs. They rely on gut feelings. No matter what, you know, you'll have some people say, oh, that's not true. I look at this, I look at that. Mm-hmm. A lot of it, you don't have any data to look at in the early stages. There are VCs who look at later stage companies, but
they're taking risks. So
you're taking care. It's a high risk activity. And so they start to look at other indicators. You know, where are other areas of success in this person's life, right? And some of that comes into, this person went to an Ivy League school. That may mean that they're successful. This person went to, worked at Facebook. That must mean that they're successful. So they're using like these previous indicators to think,
right,
that this person has a chance of success, right? And sometimes they're looking at you,
mm-hmm,
physically, visually. Mm-hmm. Is this person's going to have to be able to convince other investors? This person is going to have to convince customers and employees to work for them.
Right.
Do I believe that this is the person who could do this? Right. I mean, and we do this in everything. I mean, everyone's talking about this election. Like, people are looking at Biden and they're just like, oh, is he too old to run for president again? And so what ends up happening is you have people who are receiving money in the same networks. A lot of them went to Stanford. A lot of them went to Harvard Business School. They all look the same. They all look like Mark Zuckerberg to some type of form. What is harder for people to believe is that a Black woman can run a $1 billion company because they've never seen it.
Right.
Before, right. So that falls into the belief system of it. Another thing too is just personal trust networks. You went to Stanford? I went to Stanford. You had that class? I had the class. So there's a shared affinity there, which makes that trust factor a little bit easier. So when we look at how decisions are made in early stage investing in VC, there's a lot of personal effects that go into place. And when we look at the history of this country, racial dynamic, I think there was a survey like 5 years ago that said, you know, most white people only have like one Black friend, or if they have one Black friend, you know. So when we look at who VCs, who the industry, I believe is like 80% white old men, who they're giving their money to, they're giving it to other white men because they're in the networks with these white men. So that's a long way to say that we are not receiving these billions of dollars in funding just the way that the system is set up. Intentionally, the system is very much intentionally set up this way. So HBCUBC is an organization that I created that says, if we shift who is making the decision on who receives funding, right? If you, Imar, if you are making the decision, mm-hmm, your lens of what you identify of being success is going to be very different from, you know, an older white guy, because you have models of what success could look like in your eyes. And so therefore, you are more dispositioned to invest in someone who might look like yourself, or someone who doesn't, but more than just a Mark Zuckerberg. Right. He's such an easy target. So HBCVC was set up to create these career paths for professional investors. Particularly, we do focus on people coming out of HBCU institutions, because when we think about who has a wide network of Black entrepreneurs or other Black professionals, it is normally people who are coming out of HBCUs. As a side, I went to an HBCU, so mm-hmm, as a founder, I can be biased that way.
Right. give me bias a little bit too. One-time graduate, almost ready to be a second-time graduate. So a little biased, I do agree. Wow, that was a wealth of knowledge. Thank you for detailing all that and just connecting it back to the mission of HBCUBC. So even continuing that conversation, as a fellow myself and being a part of this program, and if there, anyone's listening that is considering applying to the program, HBCUBC prepares its fellows in so many different ways to succeed. From the application process, what you require, and it's not the typical application, you know, it kind of pushes you to think a little bit about why you're actually applying for the crash course that you guys provide. And then even after you're selected as a finalist, the interviews and things of that nature, it really preps you to be able to sit and interview with the different firms that we have the opportunity. And then after being selected by your firm, you go to the new fellow summit, get more prep and wealth of knowledge from different investors and playmakers in the field who come and speak to us. So I guess my question is, where did the idea or inspiration from the new fellow summit stem from? And why did you pick, or why did the team pick Tulsa for the new fellow summit?
So it has changed over the years. We have gone to Tulsa the past 2 years. We previously have gone to places, like we've gone to San Francisco, and I think previously we went to San Francisco just because a lot of VCs were anchored in San Francisco, and so we could bring more VCs to the new fellows summit. So that's why we did it, obviously. But our partner, Atento Capital, who is based in Tulsa, Oklahoma, along with Build in Tulsa, really suggested the idea that we look at Tulsa as an experience for our fellows. And it was a pretty easy suggestion, knowing the deep history of Tulsa, Oklahoma. I thought that it was a pretty impactful experience to bring what I consider the future leaders or the future investors or policymakers who I want to go on and create impact for Black communities to sit and learn in a space in which Black communities have been impacted tragically, right? That's a strong analogy, because there was obviously a massacre and a physical violence there.
Right.
But when I think about the opportunities that have been cut off from us and continue to be cut off, right, there's still tragedy that's being happened. Not to equate the two, obviously, but I do think it's an experience to come and sit in a historic place. And I want to be clear, sorry, the place is not historic because of the massacre. It's also historic because of the foundational communities of collective economics and collective wealth building that was there. So I thought, you know, it's a good place if you focus on that aspect of a place where there was community wealth building. And what did that look like? You know, those were different times, but how do we build inspiration of preparing and investing in the future from those places?
Wow. So you just talked about economics and how you prepare for future investment in spaces like that. As an investor and a founder yourself, what is some advice that you could give to an aspiring founder or someone that's listening today that's interested in getting into this space?
So for founders, I think it's important to like really, really decide if VC is the right choice for you. And we talked a little bit about this earlier. We should not take lightly. Once you understand, you really have to understand the motivations of a VC, right? And when you align with a VC, so just for clarifications, venture capitalists are people who manage other people's money. Angel investors are people who are investing their own money. So we're talking about venture capitalists, VCs, who their professional job is to make money off their investments. And not just make money. They've gone to people and said, I promise you, that I will make this type of money, that you'll get more money than if you were investing in the stock market. Don't invest in the stock market. Don't invest in real estate. Mm-hmm. Invest in VC, and I'm going to like do more than those returns could ever do. So they've made these commitments. They've made these promises, right? Which means that they have to translate that pressure to you, that if I invest in your business, I have to get these type of returns, right?
Right.
And those type of returns are rare, if I'm being honest, right? Mm-hmm. So, and they de-risk that by making multiple investments, right? Because generally, probably only like the whole, they know that there's going to be failure in those investments. Mm-hmm. The majority of the investments that they make are going to go out of business, but they're counting on that small, like I guess 20%, to make the outcomes that they've promised their investors, right? That's a different type of, and so you have this person who essentially now tied to you in your business affairs with right. this type of pressure of making these type of returns, right? And for them, you know, a business which is maybe a $2 million, $5 million business, which is a really good business, is still a failure to a venture capitalist, right?
Right.
So I think it's important to understand the motivations of a VC if you are going to build that type of business and what that takes for you and the commitment of you, your mental health, your family to run a VC backable business. And I truly mean that because it is a commitment. You can still run a very successful business without taking VC.
Right.
I think the uniqueness of some people who are coming from our community is that we don't have the financial edge sometimes to like, so we put ourselves in these situations where we have an urgent need for capital and make bad business deals and decisions based on that. So one, decide the type of business that you're going to build and kind of stick to that plan. Two, truly understand that building a business, you know, is truly about, you know, it's a financial, you know, don't build, you know, hot take, don't start a nonprofit, but that's another conversation. But if you are going to, I mean, the reality is, you know, if you're urgently want to make a lot of money, go get a high paying job. You have more right. chance of making a lot of money with a high paying job, right? Go get an engineering degree, get a high paying job, if that's your own motivation. But if you truly see yourself kind of solving a problem mm-hmm. and being able to solve a problem that provides value that people will actually pay for, then, you know, then that's a business. And I would say that don't be afraid to failure. Usually your best lessons come from failure. I see a lot of people start businesses and just be so committed to that one thing that they're trying to do. And it's not working out. It's not working out. You need to take your lesson, figure out why it's not working out, and then move on to the next thing. As quickly as you're able to move on to your next thing, it's just easy. But I think we get stuck in pride, people announce we're doing this, we're doing that, and we get stuck in these zombie businesses. So
I like that you said don't be afraid to fail. I was actually gonna plug that. Mm-hmm. And I was listening to a podcast that Arlen Hamilton was on from Backstage Capital. And she said that it wearies her when founders come up to her and say, I have the perfect company, because she's like, there is no perfect company. And if you have a perfect company, that's a red flag. Like you haven't failed one time. You haven't made one mistake. And she's like, those are not the companies, you know, that I'm interested in putting my dollar in. So thank you.
And more important, those probably aren't the founders that you want right. to put your
work
money
with.
In. Right. Yeah. Because if I'm investing, like, and that's what I think about. I get red flags if I'm talking to a founder and they're just like, everything's great. We're killing it. We're making lots of money. You know, because then it's like we're starting off on a bad foot. There's no trust and vulnerability there. And if I'm going to be backing you, I need to be comfortable to know that you're going to tell me where you need help at. So
And really quick, I want to backtrack to we were talking about being at the New Fellow Summit and being in Tulsa. And another, you know, aspect that goes into the support and the just the trust that you put in the fellows is the connection that you have with your senior fellows. So like having Alexis and George and Darren there, how important is it that you continue as a CEO and a founder and as an organization to support your fellows after they're graduated? And what does that mean for the space of VC, or as we are emerging into the space since it's such a tight community?
Yeah, this might be another hot take. And I know I created a whole organization around this mission of creating investors or putting people into VC. But the reality is that I created an organization to care for Black people, right? And to, you know, a lot of that is helping them along their professional journey. Some of it sometimes is their personal journey. It's hard to separate professional and personal journey. And then it's a community. It's a village that we've kind of set up here. So to me, these are people that I've like personally invested like time, energy, and if you will, prayers sometimes to support these people, whether they go into VC or not. I just want to see the well-being of Black people. And to me, that's the ultimate return. So our senior fellows, even though they have kind of like graduated from the current stage where that 6-month period where they're in training and then they're into their internship and now they're into the professional journey, that doesn't end. And so this platform that we built, our resources, the community, is something that should stay with the senior fellow through their professional, personal journey. And I personally continue to extend resources to make sure that that happens.
Yeah, and it's awesome. I think it's amazing because it gives us, as like the current fellows, to see that this isn't just a one-time thing. This isn't just the, oh, you apply, you get a job, you get some experience, go figure it out. Like, we're in this for the long run. So. And you know, even being a minority in this space, we are going to run into each other in some way, form or fashion when it comes to making these deals, meeting different entrepreneurs and businesses. So it's good to already be building this network. It's kind of
and I hope you do intentionally. Like, yes. I hope you do. I hope you, like, I'm intentionally building up this community so that not if you happen to run in or we will run in, but like, need something, you have this whole village for you. You need a job, there's a whole village for you. You need investment, you have this whole village for you. You want to get into the next big deal, you know, someone's you want to co-invest in a deal. Like, it's intentional that this community is built up for the fellow.
Do you have any future plans for HBCU VC that you can share with us? Maybe some aspirations?
Plenty of plans. Now let's see if funders will continue to give me money. But you know what? And this just goes back to my hot take. Like, running a nonprofit is really hard, right? This is 7 years for us. The challenges that we're facing at 7 years are different challenges than we faced at year one, year two, at different stages. At one point, we had 15 employees. We're down to like 4 employees. So we're at a different stage. I think that being said, as the founder, I can tell you that HBCU VC is nowhere near the totality of what I wanted to accomplish. I saw HBCU VC as like a true like support of the entire ecosystem, right? That's extending support to HBCUs as institutions, that's extended support, better support to entrepreneurs. And after 7 years, I think we've created a community of people from the investor side and going into that, but there's so many other angles of building this ecosystem that needs to be built up. And so with the support of the community, with support of, you know, our senior fellows, I would like to continue to build out the mission of HBCU VC in its totality. And that is, I think HBCU VC and other similar organizations should be providing, I think we can be the future of like innovation. We have the platform, we have the talent. Anyone who's affiliated with the HBCU should not have to wonder how can they be anchored while they're building out their vision. And so, and I say that because you look at, I look at so many other like university programs, you know, someone who goes to MIT just for an idea, they could fill out a form and get like 2,500 just to work. You know, and so those are the things that I believe our communities deserve. And I would say that the United States, the innovation economy is not even reaching half of their potential because we're not providing these entryways of funding for us to see the possibilities of our ideas being funded and implemented.
Right. Well, that was great. I'm a firm believer, and I'm new into the space. I'm new as HBCU BC fellow, but I'm a firm believer that that aspiration of those dreams and those wants will definitely come forth, because like I said already, you've all put so much into your all's fellows. Just me learning it from learning about the organization from a previous fellow, from being on LinkedIn and things of that nature. So me just being able to witness how much you guys grown and how much you guys have touched people, just from observing from the outside and now being in, I definitely can see it coming. So one last question before you leave us today. What book are you currently reading and are you enjoying it so far?
So I'm not reading a book right this moment.
Okay.
I can talk about the last book I read. The last book I read was Erasure by, I don't know if you, Erasure, it's actually the book, and I didn't know this until after I started reading it. I still haven't seen the movie. Oh, I did see the movie. Ever seen the movie American Fiction?
No.
American Fiction was a movie that I think it won an award. So there's this book that sort of like, well, the movie in the book plays on this author who's a Black author, mm-hmm. and there is a push from the industry to be more Black, however the industry sees it, like right in a certain context of like negative stereotypes, negative language, and he's seeing success in authors who are like filling into that genre, right? I think personally it was a challenging book to read. And I share this because there's a point where he leans into creating that type of genre of a book. And he actually puts like a book within a book. Mm-hmm. And it was very difficult to read. And then there's like success because he's written all these books, which he thinks is like, you know, he thinks it's like a literary genius. He's like an artist and how he thinks about things, and no one wants to read it. But then he writes this thing where he believes that he's kind of dumbed down the language, dumbed down everything. And then it takes off. And so he pretends to be this author that he isn't. And it's difficult mostly because of the parts that he puts in it, right? The backstory behind it is that from what I've read, I'm such a geek. I always gotta like read the things. Do you remember the movie Precious?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So that was based on a book called Push, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the author of this book, it was inspired by that book of like basically that movie. this was like the rap beef of Black literature, if you will. But apparently the author felt some type of way around this book, Push by Sapphire, receiving like this acclaim because he thought it portrayed Black people in a highly negative way.
Okay.
Of all the like drama that you could portray. So he kind of makes a satire. This book becomes the satire of him making this book, but it's kind of meta, if you will. I enjoyed it, but then also it was difficult to read.
Right.
I enjoyed it because I felt in his writing this external pressure of how his art, if you will, is received in how people think he should write as a Black artist versus how he wanted to. And I felt that definitely in his writing. So if you haven't checked out, check out the book. You can also check out the movie, which bears a little bit from the book. Also look it up. And like I said, it's like sort of like rap beef. But between Black artists,
it's Drake and Kendrick.
It is the literature version of Drake and
Well, thank you for sharing that with us. Now I have, so I asked that question because I need, you know, I want to add new books to my collection, but I think it's always interesting to know what someone's reading or what they're looking at, because you can, you know, pick their brain a little bit, see where they're at right now. I think it's interesting. Well, thank you for coming on our podcast, The Associate, today. Thank you for being our first guest.
Thank you so much for having me.
Join us next week as we sit with JT Trujillo, an HBCU VC fellow currently interning at the Open Opportunity Fund. On this episode, we'll be discussing the impact of HBCU VC from a fellow's perspective, diving deeper into the Tulsa experience, and much more. Thank you for joining us on The Associate, where we're bridging the gap between aspiring entrepreneurs and the world of venture capital by democratizing VC and providing access to capital, one conversation at a time.